Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
But practically and more crucial than any of these important elements is the 4% cap on increase in the property tax levy. This cap, with limited exceptions and provisions for voter override, is the key to the sustainability of the credit relief.
Governor John Corzine from his State of the State address. But can they do it? Will the state legislature agree to the governor's property tax rebate plan? And will New Jersey's towns and cities agree to that 4% a year cap on property tax increases? They now average 7%. How would a cap affect public schools? And if everyone wants to reduce property taxes, why is it so hard? We will talk with three guests this hour and open up the phones right now for your reactions to Governor Corzine's State of the State address, especially the property tax cap and credits for this first part of the hour. Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. And with us now are Louise Wilson, outgoing mayor and now deputy mayor of Montgomery Township, one of the wealthiest communities in the state, and John Shore, president of New Jersey Policy Perspectives, a think tank and advocacy group. Mayor Wilson, Mr. Shore, thanks for coming on WNYC today. Hello.
Pleasure. Good morning.
Do we have Louise Wilson?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay,
thanks.
Just making sure you're there. And let's jump right into this proposal for capping property tax increases at 4% a year. Mayor Wilson, under the governor's proposal, the state legislature would ban any town or city from increasing property taxes more than 4% a year, with very limited exceptions, as we heard in that clip. Are you in favor of that?
I think that's going to be exceptionally difficult for most towns and cities, and it's exasperating because the state legislature and the state in general doesn't impose these kinds of caps on themselves, and so much of the increase that you see in local property taxes, whether it's on the municipal side or in school budgets, are the result of mandated costs that are passed down to the local level, combined with a failure to fund property tax relief in a way that the state is statutorily supposed to. So it's really, it's going to be very, very tough, and people will certainly see, at least on the municipal side, visible erosions of service and layoffs and that kind of thing.
Take me further down that road. What do you think it would mean in terms of erosions of service in Montgomery Township if this 4% cap was imposed?
Well, I think we would try to deal with it in a number of ways. I think, frankly, Montgomery is a town where we probably would have less trouble than a lot of towns in staying under that cap. Our municipal taxes are already fairly low, about $1,150 per household on average, and they represent about 9% of the overall property tax bill that homeowners pay in Montgomery. But then again, we don't offer garbage pickup, and we don't offer leaf pickup. And we certainly won't in the future.
Residents do that on their own? They pay for garbage pickup privately?
That's correct.
Right. So you can give me a more general answer, maybe, what you think it would mean for a reduction in services in towns and municipalities.
It probably reductions in, the big cost drivers at the municipal level are public works and police. And so if you want to see big savings, that's where, you know, it would have to come from in most towns. And I don't mean that, to be a scaremonger. That's just where the money is. So roads, parks, and police protection, emergency services, you know, we are, most towns are on the police side, subject to binding arbitration. And so, you know, there's a cost driver there that oftentimes, you know.
You have contracts with built-in raises, and the cap would not negate those contracts. So, John Shore, president of New Jersey Policy Perspectives, do you support the 4% cap?
I've got concerns about caps as well. There's no question that property taxes in New Jersey are too high. On a per capita basis, they're the highest of any state in the country. But I think we need to do more to get at the fundamental causes of that as opposed to somewhat arbitrarily saying you must limit your spending or your tax increases to a certain percentage. What we're not talking about, and I think we should, is really restructuring the whole state and local tax system in New Jersey. We need to rely less on local property taxes and deliver fewer services at the local level and rely more on broad-based state taxes like the income tax and the sales tax and deliver services more on a regional or a county level. We're basically running a 21st century economy with an 18th century delivery system in New Jersey, and that fundamental issue, I think, needs to get looked at.
So you want to see more of the tax burden shifted to the state income tax, and that would ease, you say, the property taxes. Well, do you agree with Mayor Wilson that a lot of the property tax increases around the state come because of state mandates, things that the state says that localities have to spend money on without providing that money?
I think that's part of it. A good example of that is education. Much of what schools have to provide is mandated from the state, and yet in recent years, state aid to education has basically been flat, partly because of the state's own budget crisis. And as it is, New Jersey, as a state government pays a lower percentage of school costs than the national average. So clearly, if we just got ourselves up to average in what percentage of local school costs state government pays, that in itself would be a big relief on the property tax burden.
Well, in fact, Governor Corzine talked about education in the state of the state address. Of course, the state is still under court order to reduce the inequities in public school funding. You mentioned the Abbott decision. That's one factor in the property taxes. So let me play a clip of the governor from the state of the state on the issue of education funding.
I see five overarching goals in developing that formula. First and foremost, we should determine school aid on the basis of what is needed for each child, one child at a time, to achieve quality educational outcomes. Second, we should distribute school aid more broadly across the state in order to help more of our communities finance the cost of education. Third, we should recognize that our formula must account for economic and demographic differences. We need to provide a thorough and efficient education for each child. School spending must come with greater accountability. Finally, as it relates to timing, we want a formula as soon as possible.
So, Mayor Wilson, what's your reaction to the governor on that? And can the state both get property taxes down and fulfill its mandate to improve education for kids in low-income districts?
Well, I'm very interested to know what exactly is meant by funding school districts according to what's needed for each child. I absolutely agree that the funding needs to be distributed more fairly. The primary reason that the property taxes in my town are as high as they are, and they are very high, is because of how little state aid we receive for education. About 6% of our school budget is covered by state aid. That compares with a state average of 35% or 40%.
I presume you receive little state aid because it's such an affluent district, so it's determined that you don't need it.
That's correct. And yet, we have a lot of people in Montgomery. I mean, the overall household income is high, but we have a lot of people who are not wealthy. And
their property taxes.
An unfair burden on those people. So
right. Well, John Shore, from a New Jersey policy perspective, how would you deal with that kind of inequity in a town like Montgomery, where not everybody is rich, but everybody's got to pay those property taxes?
Well, I think it gets to what I think the governor is saying, but clearly the devil is in the details, and we need to know more. He sounds like he's talking about increasing state school aid to municipalities around the state, recognizing the fact that even so-called affluent suburban districts need help paying for kids' education, take the burden off the property taxpayers. I think that makes sense. I think to his credit, he does not seem to be saying that we need to find ways to get around the mandate to give money that's needed to the Abbott districts, the 30 poorest districts in New Jersey. But if he's talking about making the pie bigger, I think that's a very good idea. And I hope that that means, getting back to what I was saying before, that the state will do more to allow the local municipalities and school districts not to have to charge as much in property taxes.
This is WNYC, and as we get your reactions, and we'll go to the phones right now, to Governor Corzine's State of the State address, including the property tax percentage cap, 4% a year inflation cap on property tax proposal. My guests are John Shore, who's president of the watchdog group New Jersey Policy Perspectives, and Louise Wilson, outgoing mayor, now deputy mayor of Montgomery Township. And our phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Or you can email us, brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. And Jonathan in Bernards Township, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, Brian. And hi, John and Louise.
Hi.
I'd like to ask about one of the problems with percentage caps as opposed to flat caps. In New Jersey, we have some towns and some school districts who are the good guys. They provide great services or great education at low cost. They're efficient. And there are the bad guys who are wasteful and don't get great results. The problem with percentage caps, like allowing each town a 4% property tax increase, is that it rewards the bad guys with a bigger increase. We want efficiency. We want value.
Well, wait, I'm doing the math here. And so your definition of the bad guys must be the wealthier districts, because a percentage cap gives them more extra dollars than it does a lower income district. Do I have you right?
It could be, but there's not a strong correlation between how much you spend and how well you perform. For example, school district in our town spends far below the state average per student, but gets great results. And so there are a lot of districts like that in the state that spend less and get great results. So we want efficiency. And so my question is, why can't we have, incentives for frugality? And one way to do that is with flat caps. That means to limit the property tax increases to a flat amount per taxpayer, like the same dollar amount.
A certain dollar amount. Now, that's interesting. And in fact, we have a few people calling in to propose this. Let me put someone else on. Diana, and where are you?
Freedon, New Jersey.
Oh, you're in Freedon. Hi.
Hi.
Also calling about a flat cap rather than a percentage cap?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. And I think John touched on it earlier. We're trying to continue this antiquated system of property taxes that can fluctuate up and down. So it's not tied to your income and your earning potential, and also not tied to the time when you're most likely to be leveraging the services. So what ends up happening is elderly people are being taxed out of their home, and they don't have children in the school system. So if we were to increase the personal income tax by whatever percentage, 10% across the board, eliminate property taxes and put in for local services just a flat, $1,000 property type of tax, this would tie the money that's going out to the amount of money that you have coming in.
I see.
And then when you're not using the services, when you're elderly or you're younger and don't have children in the school system, and then that fund would be centralized, and so people in Essex, for instance, wouldn't be overly taxed to be able to support a large urban center like Newark. We would all be supporting all across the board.
John Shore, do you like that idea?
Yes, absolutely. There's elements of that that I think make a lot of sense. You know, I mentioned earlier that the per capita property tax in New Jersey is first in the country, but the per capita income tax rate is 17th in the country. So we're basically relying a lot on a tax that's not based on your ability to pay. It's based on the assessed value of your house, and as the caller pointed out, senior citizens who've long ago paid off their mortgage and live on fixed incomes are paying a huge percentage of their income now in property taxes, while the sales tax, while the income tax in New Jersey is relatively low. So yes, the more we could shift off of local property taxes and onto broad-based state taxes, especially the income tax, which is based much more on ability to pay than property taxes, we could then be basically pooling our resources and spreading it along the state in a way that makes sense.
Well, Governor Corzine certainly did not propose any state income tax hike in the State of the State address. In fact, I think he's dead set against that. Mayor Wilson, how would that go over in Montgomery?
I don't like that idea either. I strongly agree that the way we fund schools is very hurtful and regressive, and that absolutely has got to be reformed. But I do not believe that the answer lies in raising income taxes. And I really think that a big part of the problem, particularly for the suburban districts, not just the wealthy ones like mine, which is very much like Bernard's, by the way, spends much or well below the state average per pupil, and yet our property taxes, school taxes, are very, very high. That kind of problem can be addressed in large part by reforming the school funding formula.
Yeah.
And I really think that that moving toward higher income tax is very risky in a state where our economic health right now is very much in jeopardy, and it's not just older people who are leaving.
Brian,
is that Jonathan and Bernard's?
Yes, Brian, there's a difference between a flat tax and a flat cap, and I just want to make sure that both points get addressed. My suggestion is a flat cap, which means every property taxpayer would be allowed a flat amount, like $250 per year.
As an increase. Right.
Yeah.
So, Diana, you were actually talking about more of a flat property tax.
I'm talking about both. You would have a flat property tax that would be at some capped level, like $1,000 a property or what have you, and then tied to the income tax. And I understand that, you know, raising income taxes wouldn't be popular, but if it was balanced with an elimination of the $11,000 a year or $13,000 a year property tax, that would be acceptable, I believe, to the citizens. Obviously, just raising income taxes and not doing it a subsequent reduction in property taxes would not be a popular thing to do. And I currently pay, you know, around $11,000 a year in property taxes.
Right. Diana and Jonathan, thank you both very much for your calls. And Mayor Wilson, if we assume that this would be taxpayer dollar neutral, in other words, a shift of what people are paying from property taxes to income taxes, and that it would allow a net decrease, as the governor is trying to achieve, but weight it more toward the income taxes, and at a time when you're saying it's the state giving you the mandates on what you have to spend anyway, why doesn't that work? Why isn't that both more equitable and more efficient?
Well, it would be more equitable. I guess, you know, everything ought to be on the table and ought to be looked at very carefully. My concern is that we don't lose sight of what the real cost drivers are and don't give up on reducing costs wherever we reasonably can without allowing our education system to be damaged. I mean, state and federal mandates, health benefits and pensions, binding arbitration, all of these are cost drivers that, that the devil is going to be in those details, I believe. And I just really, I don't think that we should be talking about the solution being raising other taxes when at the top end, our income taxes are already, you know, so very high.
And John Shore,
and at the bottom end too, for that matter.
Right. So, John Shore, why would that be a good idea? People are leaving New Jersey. The state is competing with other states for business. The governor is not proposing an increase in state income tax.
Yep.
So why wouldn't it be a net negative?
I would wager a guess that more people are leaving New Jersey because they can't afford their property taxes than are leaving New Jersey because of the income tax, which really is actually lower than New York State, for example. One of the sound bites coming out of Trenton these days that oversimplifies matters is, why would you raise one tax to lower another tax? And the answer is, of course you would, if you could raise a fair tax based on ability to pay in order to reduce an unfair tax based on, you know, an 18th century formula that says you should pay taxes based on what your house is worth. I think the more we talk about things like caps, and the less we talk about really restructuring the whole state and local tax system in New Jersey and where and how we deliver services, we're still not getting to the elephant in the living room here, which is how we do these things in New Jersey.
Well,
I think we could have as much service as we have now, not have to sacrifice services, if we would tackle this tax structure and the archaic system of having 566 municipalities
and
over 600 school districts.
We'll continue in a minute with John Shore and Mayor Wilson. We'll touch the third rail of New Jersey politics, consolidation, and talk to the State Transportation Commissioner, Chris Caluri, as well. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and of course, more of your calls and emails.
Credits and caps work off each other. They're a tandem. Like Lewis and Clark, or Batman and Robin, breaking new ground and protecting the public.
Governor Corzine again. Didn't think you'd hear Batman and Robin in the State of the State address, did you?
I was waiting for Bert and Ernie.
I was wondering who else. I don't know. George and Carl? No, we'll get to that next hour. Actually, I should remind our listeners that we have back-to-back live news specials tonight on WNYC AM 820 at 8 o'clock. We will have a live one-hour call-in with Governor Corzine taking your calls. And at 9 o'clock, live coverage of President Bush's Iraq speech. The governor's call-in at 8, the president's address at 9 on AM 820 WNYC. And we continue to get reaction from our guests to the proposals in Governor Corzine's State of the State address, particularly on property taxes. John Shore, president of New Jersey Policy Perspectives, a think tank and advocacy group. And Louise Wilson, outgoing mayor and now deputy mayor of Montgomery Township, one of the most wealthy communities in the state. And let's play another clip of the governor, and let's go on to the famous third rail of New Jersey politics, consolidation.
Let's not forget that New Jersey has more governmental units per square mile than any other state. We have 566 municipalities, 616 school districts, 486 local authorities, 792 fire districts and companies. For crying out loud, we have 23 school districts that don't have a school. The facts speak for themselves. We should stop talking about this and do something.
John Shore, why does New Jersey have school districts with no schools?
Well, there's a lot of quirky things about New Jersey. We basically have divided ourselves into the tiniest possible pieces, and then at some point we've had districts where they've consolidated or regionalized to some extent to where the schools are now taken care of by a regional entity. But when most of the states around the country were consolidating school districts and municipalities as well, New Jersey was breaking them apart. The governor is right to be touching on this. I hope that as time goes on, he'll touch on it even more strongly, because it really lies at the heart of the problem here. The tax, as bad as the tax system is in New Jersey, it is really a symptom of a larger problem, which, as I said, is dividing ourselves into the tiniest possible pieces for providing government services and educating children.
Mayor Wilson, does your school district have schools?
Oh, yes. We sure do. We have about 51 or 5,200 school children, and I think that full consolidation of towns is just a loser. I don't think that people are going to go. I think I think people will really, really reject that. But I believe that consolidation of services makes a lot of sense.
What's the difference?
Well, people want to live in their own town, whether it's, you know, 650 people in Rocky Hill, which Montgomery surrounds on three sides, and which sends about 70 kids out of, you know, the over 5,000 that we have in our school district. or whether it's a town like Montgomery with 22,000 people. Folks do not want to merge with another town. Even the Princetons, Princeton Borough and Princeton Township, have voted on it over and over again and rejected it.
Well,
the process, they have consolidated a lot of stuff. Their schools, their planning, their health departments.
But what do you get, just to take you as an example? I'm really not familiar with your town situation at all, so I don't know if it's a good example. But what do you lose by not consolidating with this other town that you surround on three sides? Is it a race and class issue or a technical finance issue, or what is it?
No, it's a where do you live issue. It's a what's your town issue.
Do I put on my return address stickers?
Yeah, it's a community thing. And the I think what would happen if Montgomery and Rocky Hill merged, and probably Montgomery taxpayers and homeowners and voters would support it overwhelmingly, and Rocky Hill would reject it overwhelmingly, Rocky Hill's taxes would rise.
Mm.
Right now, they don't pay very much for police protection. They don't pay for the capital costs of the schools that their kids go to. Because
is it a more affluent community than yours?
No, it's in some ways comparable. I mean, the household income is not as high, but I would say that in terms of sort of the character of our communities, we're very similar, and certainly,
I'll tell you what, I'm going to go to a caller. This is not my apologies to Beatrice, who we will get to second, but Stephen Metuchen is calling against condensing townships. Steve, hi, tell us why.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I live in what they call a famous donut town, which is surrounded by a huge township, Edison. I think it's the second or third largest municipality in New Jersey. And years ago, it broke away, 100 years ago, from Edison because of problems with the governance and people wanting to have more local control. I sit on a school board overseeing construction as a citizen. Board of Education members devote their time. They're very conscientious. Every dollar is cautiously guarded. We are concerned that they want to consolidate our town with the larger Edison town that's had problems with construction. There were scandals on roofing awards and bids.
Why does Edison want to consolidate?
They don't. They're not pushing it. And
is somebody pushing it? Oh, the legislature is pushing it.
The legislature is pushing it.
John Shore, are you familiar with this situation, Metuchen and Edison?
Yes, in fact, there's several hole-in-the-donut situations around New Jersey.
You want to talk about it? Are you more in favor, John Shore, of this kind of consolidation?
I am, I'm sensitive to the concerns that Louise raises and the caller raises, but I also think that it may be a loser issue right now, but New Jersey's a loser because of it. We have to get this state into the 21st century. We don't have 566 little problems. We have one big problem about how we deliver services and pay for it, and frankly, sometimes it is a race and a class issue, but it's also an efficiency issue. You take Bergen County, northeastern part of the state, biggest county in the state. They have more pieces of firefighting equipment than New York City has, and they have 68 police chiefs. I think it's hard to get from here to there, but 10 years after you did, nobody would miss what they gave up because they'd realize it makes a whole lot more sense in the modern world to deliver services with economies of scale and not sort of cling to the idea that my town has its own mayor and its own borough attorney and engineer and court and everything else that costs a lot of money.
So
I don't disagree with a lot of what John just said. I think the key is deliver services, the service delivery part of it. I totally agree that having all those police chiefs now I'm going to hear from the PBA, but it's just unnecessary. I mean, even in Somerset County, we've got 19 police chiefs, and then other than that, we have police directors, and maybe we could look at some economies there, some regionalization, certainly with regard to municipal courts, with tax assessment, even with services such as animal control. All of those can be offered on a regional level. It doesn't necessarily follow that you have to be merging towns. People do like to be able to elect their local officials and feel that there is service, you know, right there in town, people to go to right there in town. And I think that the challenge is to strike the right balance. I mean, there are some egregious examples, like John cited.
By the way, overall,
I don't think that's the answer. I think that the cost drivers are different.
You said the PBA won't like you saying that about all the police chiefs. The chiefs are in the union?
The chiefs are not in the PBA. The chiefs are sworn officers and have tenure, and New Jersey's way of providing for police leadership dictates that police chiefs always shall be promoted from within a particular department, and so. So the PBA, generally speaking, I think more than generally, very, very strongly supports the police chief structure.
All right. Beatrice in Edgewater, you're on WNYC. Hi, Beatrice.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I am a councilwoman in Edgewater, New Jersey, and we go through this exercise of looking at our budget and how it affects our taxes, obviously on a yearly basis. And we have had some serious issues with our taxes going up and up and up. In the last 9 years, we have gone up 48%. And when I listened to Governor Corzine's speech, you know, it's all fine and dandy to say that we need to cap, but we also need to look at the reason why our taxes are going up. And there are a couple of them. You know, there's a domino effect. Unfortunately, when you get elected, you don't automatically become a financial expert or an expert on DPW and an expert on roads. There are many things that you have to look at. So you see, you know, and I'm in Bergen County, you know, you see a lot of councils that unfortunately are so overwhelmed by the growth that we have experienced that they, you know, more or less rubber stamp budgets. And we depend on our professionals to tell us, you know, our auditors, our CFOs, et cetera. What I'm getting at is that I think to really look at reducing our budget, because there is fat, we need to look at serious pay-to-play reform. Because we are giving out no-bid contracts that are costing taxpayers a tremendous amount of money.
Because of campaign donations?
Correct. For instance, we just had our reorganization meeting early last week, and the three professionals that did not contribute to the majority that is in power currently got the boot. And the ones who did and consistently do continue to get appointed.
Well, I'm curious then, Beatrice, do you like the governor's idea to create an office of state controller? Would such a person do the kind of audits that might help your town? But both on, you know, blowing the whistle on pay-to-play contracts and on just helping people be better green shades?
I think it would be a good first step. I had made a motion at the last meeting that we have an independent ethics board to look into these things because we have a lot of complaints. And unfortunately, there is no one, and I'm an independent council member. I do not have a party to lean on.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be a good first step, but of course it would depend on who the person is. I love the idea. But I'd have to see how it works and how true to form it would be by
right.
following the laws on the book.
Mayor Wilson, do I understand correctly that you're not so excited about a state controller position?
I am not so excited about a state controller system, but let me say that the patronage system and pay-to-play absolutely cost people money. And I see those as those two issues, the controller and a fundamental, broad-based ethics reform, comprehensive ethics reform, as being very, very different. The, you know, pay-to-play, Montgomery passed a pay-to-play ordinance or anti-pay-to-play ordinance some years ago. It's just not a factor in our town. But pay-to-play at the and patronage at the county level and in a lot of towns is absolutely no question that it costs taxpayers money. And of course, erodes public trust as it should. The controller, it seems to me, as it's proposed, is given a really broad set of powers and answers not only to the governor but also to the assembly speaker and the Senate president. and the powers and authority that that person and what is going to have to be a big staff has are, I don't know. There's no question in my mind that there are towns in this state where the resources have been used poorly and where reform is absolutely needed and oversight is needed. And yet to require every town to ask permission to let a $2 million contract and then wait to hear back whether or not, you know, the state is going to participate in that or not is just a layer of bureaucracy that makes me a little green around the gills.
We have to leave it here because we're out of time, but I'm just going to close with an email that reinforces what the state is up against. This comes from a listener in Maplewood who says, we have a small three-bedroom house and have seen our taxes double in 7 years from roughly $7,000 to over $14,000.
Ouch.
When we bought our house, it was assessed at $176,000. The value hasn't gone up that much, and we've done no significant improvements. Sadly, it's too late for us. We can no longer afford to pay more taxes than we do on our mortgage, and we've sold our home and we're moving. So there's the challenge for New Jersey. Governor Corzine has put a whole set of proposals on the table. Again, a reminder, we will have a one-hour live call-in with Governor Corzine tonight at 8 on AMA 20 WNYC, just in advance of the president's Iraq speech. And I want to thank Louise Wilson, Deputy Mayor of Montgomery Township, and John Shore, President of New Jersey Policy Perspectives, a think tank and advocacy group. Thank you both very much.
Delighted. Thank you, Brian.
And we will continue in a minute with the New Jersey Transportation Commissioner, Chris Kaluri. Stay with us. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.